Hey everybody, this is Justin Case, and welcome to another episode of Case in Point. Tonight, I have my trusty friend, Ponch.
Hey everybody.
And Jody's not here. Jody's in a parade, and he is sweltering right now. He's wearing jeans and a t-shirt in 85 degree weather. I'm sure he's sweating bullets. But anyway, tonight we are going to, I originally was going to do a Han Solo movie review, but Ponch hasn't seen it and Jody's not here. And I figured maybe it would be better if, I know the listeners probably want to hear all three of us talk about it. And I will just say, you know, without spoiling anything, I really enjoyed the film and I left very charged as far as a fan, and I'll just leave it at that because I really want to dig into that in another episode. Now, what I'd like to do is just do a few shout-outs real quick. I really dig what Chad Seward is doing with the element of surprise. I appreciate, sir, your kudos on that show. Can I use the word kudos? Is it outdated? Probably is.
It is.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is, hey, man, I really appreciate it. Your words are kind. And keep up the awesome podcasting because, you know, I'm looking forward to the next episode, and it's great. So thank you so much. Also, I would like to talk some good things about the McSauce podcast. Those guys, Ian, Paul, and Matt, those guys they've got some great movie reviews, and I haven't listened to the last episode yet, but I'm looking forward to that. I'm kind of behind on my podcast episodes. Yeah, I know, it's sad. But so check those guys out. Their movie reviews are great, and I really enjoy like their Star Wars banter, and I always look forward to what they have to say about the movies because a lot of times they bring perspectives. I'm like, "Oh, okay, I never thought of it that way," you know. Check those guys out. And I noticed that Mr. Ryan McCormick of the Fireside Chat podcast, check his show out. He's been cranking the episodes out. He's in like full steam mode. It's awesome. And thank you, sir, for buying a shirt. I really appreciate it. And thank you to the other podcasts that have bought Case in Point podcast t-shirts. And you guys can check those out on tpublic.com. Boy, I sound like Gene Simmons, don't I? Anyway, I don't have a $2,000 vault of B-sides to sell you. So we should probably talk about that and some point. Is really funny. Anyway,
you have a $50 vault of Z sides.
Yeah, B sides are bad enough. At any rate, yeah, no Han Solo review tonight. I want to hold off on that. I wanted to talk a little bit about, I'm going to the Lilac City Comic Con, formerly known as the Spokane Comic Con, and I'll be going up there. My driver for going up there is, well, it'll be my son's first Comic Con he's ever gone to. And Lou Ferrigno is going to be up there. That's really my driver for going and that, and to spend some time with my son. He's really excited about that, so that's cool. And I think it'd be great for him to actually, like, hey, this guy's the Hulk, you know? And it's like, he's the Hulk I grew up with the TV series. So for me, I'm going to be like a 6-year old again, you know, seeing that guy in person. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, lots going on. And we're going to be, I've got a lot of backlog going on. I'll be covering the Han Solo movie, and I will be giving you guys, the listeners, a full review of my experience at the Lilac City Comic Con. So stay tuned for that. I got some new music coming up pretty soon. I'm writing a new track. I'll have that on the podcast soon. The podcast website, jwcase.com, I will be having, I've got links to the podcast, the Case Point podcast there. I have my projects I'm working on, the Knight Rider build, the DeLorean build. I'll have my music projects on there. So check that website. I'll be adding to that as time goes on. I'll be doing some toy reviews. We'll get a YouTube channel going. Trying to just get all this going, and you know, it's, you know, with my schedule and everything, it gets a little tricky, but it's all going to be there, so stay tuned for that. I appreciate everybody's downloads, listens, support, comments, likes, follows on social media. I really appreciate it. It's awesome. And the podcast is really gaining momentum, and it's a very exciting thing. You know, when I started doing this with Jody, I never expected to be doing this, and let alone have a podcast that people, are actually enjoy listening to. So it's very humbling and it's awesome. So thank you so much. Now, Ponch, what I was going to do was I wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit about, because you're an artist. You know, this is what you do. That's how you put, it's what you do for your dinner, man. You are skilled in many different types of art. I've seen your pencil drawings. I've seen paints. What kind of got you into all of that? What kind of got you into being an artist? When did the bug bite you?
To be honest with you, I have no idea. there's not a particular memory or instance that it just, I just suddenly said, hey, I'm going to be an artist. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I can't think of anything like that, but I do know, my mom likes to talk about how I supposedly started drawing, from the age of 2 years old. So, and I figure my mom wouldn't lie about something like that. So I figure, hey, I've been drawing since I was 2 years old, according to my mom. So I'll just go with that. There's not one particular, like I said before, there's not one particular moment or instance that I can remember offhand that I just decided to start drawing or inclined to just start doing that. But I think some of my earlier memories, I do remember drawing some random stuff. I think one of my earlier memories is drawing the Mets, New York Mets logo, not the baseball with the cities, cityscape and mm-hmm. the bridge, not that, but the Mets type you would see in the front of the jerseys. That's one of my earlier memories of drawing stuff. And I think instead of drawing the word Mets, I mistook the S for an A. So it was meta.
Hey, that's cool. That's meta powers, right?
Sure. But I got that because I got that from my father because he's been a Met fan since, and I don't even know, I would guess since when they drafted Nolan Ryan, I'm assuming. I don't know.
But oh, wow.
He goes back to Tom Seaver and Gil Hodges when he was the first general GM for the team and stuff. So
that was towards the end of his career, huh?
I think so, yeah, because at that time, I think he stopped being a player. He just dedicated himself to being a GM,
Yeah, that was, right after the baseball strike, around there, when they had the baseball strike in the early 90s.
Yeah. Oh, no, this is way before that.
Oh,
this
really?
Is, the 60s, man. Way before that.
Yeah, my baseball history blows, so don't be looking at me for answers. Anyway,
what was
first thing that someone said hey, you got something going on here? I mean, you talked about your mother and stuff saying this is great, but when was it maybe, when did you first think that maybe, I would like to go to school for this or do this for a living? I mean, what kind of, or was it just, kind of a sequence of events?
To be honest, I can't really think of anything like that. If that ever did happen, it's kind of one of those things that, as a kid, if there's something you like to pick up on or you like to do, you just kind of do it because you enjoy it. So I think that's the way it was for me and drawing and illustrating and stuff. And I mean, I always when we're in grade school, those Scholastic book orders where you get whatever books are in that and that super paper thin order form where you see all these books.
Those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, they were I think one of the first books I had ordered from there, well, my parents did for me, was this, I don't remember the name of the book, but it was a Star Wars drawing book, a how-to draw, whatever Star Wars stuff,
oh, that's cool.
A Land Speeder or the Sandcrawler or the Death Star and stuff, and I guess when I was younger, too, I had an overactive imagination, overactive mind, so I always like to put my thoughts on paper, so I guess illustrating was just the best way of doing that. So yeah, like I said before, it was just something I just enjoyed doing when I was a kid, along with everything else, playing with G.I. Joes, playing Nintendo, all that stuff. So to me, it was kind of all encompassing type of thing for me to do when I was younger. But it wasn't until I would say maybe sixth or seventh grade where I guess people would have been, I'm not one to I don't like hearing like praise about my stuff, even though it's nice, but it's kind of like, oh, that's nice, and you just leave me alone so I can see your stuff.
Nice.
but I didn't start, like, I guess paying attention to it more until like 7th or 8th grade. I'd say 7th grade, where I think this was when I was in Indian River Middle School. This was like upstate New York. And I think I entered like some school, like local school art contest, and I won the contest by drawing some deer and like deer in like some outdoor wilderness type of landscape and stuff. And
oh, okay.
From that, I won like a set of like 32 piece Prismacolor set, which at the time I thought was great. But now I think back now, it's like Prismacolors are pretty pricey. Well, not super pricey, but fairly pricey art, like art pencils, art markers and stuff. They can be pricey if you spend, you know, if you get like a bunch of stuff from them. But still, when I was a kid, I was like, wow, this is freaking great. So I think at that point, I started taking notice and thinking, well, maybe I can maybe try doing this full time. You know, of course, when you're that young, you're not thinking, you know, I'm going to do this as a job. You know, I'm going to go to college, this, you know, this, that, whatever. It was more like, man, I think I can probably do this more often than I normally do. So, and then going through like middle school and high school, I started realizing, well, I can apply this to such and such field. And that's when, you know, I'll start paying attention to like colleges or, you know, comic artists. Like these guys actually get paid to do these comics and stuff. And See, I think it wasn't until like maybe middle school, high school, and so I started like becoming more serious about future plans of what I could do with this stuff as I got older and stuff. Yeah, I don't know if I answered your question or not, but yeah, I would say, yeah, middle school, high school is when I became more serious about like what I could do after high school or as an adult.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, what were some of the early comic book artists that influenced you to kind of really stoke the fire, man? You'd be like, hey, this is great. Like, I mean, you were more of a Marvel guy, weren't you?
Yeah, I ended up buying and reading more Marvel stuff. That doesn't mean I didn't like DC. It's just, you know, I read more Marvel stuff, so I gravitated towards that more. I mean, although I knew, you know, of course I knew about, like, the big guys like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, mm-hmm. Green Lantern and stuff.
It's almost like DC is almost like the Star Trek to the Star Wars. You know what I mean? It's like it's a more... I'd step on some toes here, but... Yeah. What were some of the artists in Marvel what are some actual artist names that really you're like, man, this guy's great? Who, I mean, mine was like Mark Bagley, and you know, Mark Bagley is my favorite, but who was like, who could you say was really the artist that like, man, this guy's great, I really like his artist chops?
I think the earliest artist I can think of is probably Sal Buscema. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right, but he did Spectacular Spider-Man. And I think you mentioned in a previous episode, like I was trying to sell you the virtues of Sal Buscema, but you were like, nah, this is a Mac, right? Mark Bagley, so leave me alone.
Yeah, right.
But I really liked how this is me like trying to formulate why I liked him back in the day, like, you know, now. But I liked how at the time, it was like he incorporated some of the old school aesthetics from, like, you know, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko.
Yeah, like, I could see that.
You know, nice thick contoured lines, not a lot of like wasted strokes.
Yeah, but then, yeah, right. Because he's real. It's like, and he really captured the emotions of the characters.
Yeah, yeah. And I was gonna mention that he was very expressive. Like I remember with like Spider-Man, he wouldn't like exaggerate, like, say the eye pieces in his like mask the way like say Tom McFarlane or Eric Larson would.
Yeah.
But the way he would show expression was more like the image that keeps on popping in my head is I don't remember what issue it's from, but there's an issue where I guess he was fighting Rhino, and Rhino has him in like a headlock.
Yeah.
And the way he has his head like angled, it just seems like, damn, the guy looks like he's in drastic pain trying to get out of this headlock.
Yeah, yeah, I can see the cover in my head right now, because that's one I've mentioned on the show before, where it was Yeah, he's in like a sleeper hold. He's got Spider-Man in a sleeper hold. And yeah, the way, because Spider-Man had his head tipped back, and you're like, wow, he can really, even though he's got the mask on, you can really see like the anguish that he's in, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's a good pull, man.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, I really liked his the way he handled like line weights and stuff, and just his like body, the way he used like a body, like the way he drew body positions, like
yeah
it wasn't very static, right? I mean, even though, you know, it's like a, you know, like fairly static medium, but the way he just, the way he drew the bodies were even, the, even that was like very
well, it was very, it's kind of like, it's very, is angular the word I'm looking for?
No, well, not for me. Yeah, it's very like, you can tell like
a lot of straight lines. Well, think about like Norman Osborn's face, you know, and usually when he did like not Norman Osborn's face, or maybe like Adrian Toomes, aka the Vulture, when he when he did. He had this thing going on in the 90s where, like, Aunt May had all these old guys jonesing after, like Doc Ock, Otto Octavius, Dr. Octopus was, he wanted a piece. Vulture wanted a piece. You know, and Norman Osborn, maybe not so much. It was more of a, probably like a con artist kind of thing, but they had that, like even her emotions, like when Sal Buscema would do her facial expressions and stuff, it was like, it just jumped off the page. But I guess my thing, the term I could use to describe his art, why I was a little turned off by it when I was younger, was like, just because Mark Bagley's stuff was more, had a lot more, it was more fluid, and it lended itself well better to the inks. And whereas Sal Buscema, I mean, it was more dark. It was a more gritty kind of style of art, and I was more into the cartoony stuff, and that's what a lot of it. But I mean, as an adult now, I can appreciate his style. It was a totally different thing, and I'm in the process of going back and collecting all those books.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Yeah, I just thought of the word. He's very expressive with the way he uses line, and Like you were just mentioning just now, like his line weight's very like stark and very contrasty.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. And yeah, he did have a tendency of kind of being like not straight edge, but a lot of like almost boxy type of like facial structure and stuff.
Yeah,
but,
right, exactly.
But nowhere near as like as severe as like say somewhere like John Romita Jr. would be.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just more like, yeah, I guess like for me, they were like every stroke, there was a purpose for each one. There was no wasted, you know, cross hatching or any of that nonsense, like Jim Lee from the early 90s and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, I
we
do
said
like
at the
him,
same
but
time we said it, man, because it was just like there's like little nicks and scratches everywhere, and you know, it's like,
yeah,
holy crap, this guy must either be hyperactive or he's got a lot of free time on his hands, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, I as far as like Jim Lee goes, I mean, he was another one that caught my eye when I was younger. I mean, of course, like from the early 90s, like him, Eric Larson, Tom McFarlane,
yeah,
Rob Liefeld, unfortunately. Basically, the Image Seven, like we'll see Portacio. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right.
Mm-hmm.
Or Silvestri, those guys. But yeah, more Jim Lee, because he was like the guy out of that group. But I really liked how, I didn't really like how is there's stuff about him that I liked and didn't like. I think anatomy wise, that I really liked that and didn't like that about him. Where, you know, you can tell he knew the body structure, he knew how to he knew how the body functioned. So when it came to like action poses, nothing, he didn't do anything that didn't make sense as far as like, you know, like foreshortening or anything like that. But at the same time, maybe it's just me, but it seemed like all the dudes and all the ladies just kind of looked the same, except for like maybe different hair styles and hair colors and stuff. But still, like, he caught my eye when I was younger, because, you know, when you're a kid in the early 90s, how could you not be like, you know, be caught on by like all, him and the, all the, like the guys that eventually broke off to make Image. But, yeah. What I did like about him is that as like the 90s went along, emphasize, he made less emphasis on the cross hatching. I think that allowed his art, his art style to like really shine. Like for me, even as a kid, I always thought the cross hatching was just too much.
Right. And I could see that
by lessening that, like, he actually, when he did do cross hatching, it actually made sense, and there was a reason and purpose for it, not, you know, not cross hatching for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
But I think the guy that caught my eye the most was probably Joe Madureira in the mid to late 90s, because he had that, you know, like, I guess I would call, like, American manga style, where, I mean, he was a huge manga fan, or he is a manga fan, huge one. And especially in his run with Uncanny X-Men, you saw a lot of that influence, you know, whether it's like, you know, like the action sequences, or just like the a lot of like movements that you usually associate with like manga type of art style. He brought, you know, he incorporated a lot of that to his art style, and you know, like hairstyles with the females, or just like over exaggerated features for like, you know, like some of the villains were like the Hulk, he would just have it like almost grotesque in the way he would draw it, but very manga fluid, very like action packed, action oriented stuff. I think you can even attest to it too. Like, again, I think towards late 90s, as we got closer to graduating from high school, like there were times where I was either like heavily influenced by his art style, or I was actually like straight up aping his art style. You know, it's such a very dynamic, you know, type of like style he had, especially when he left Marvel and started doing the battle chases with Image. Like, that really.
Oh yeah, 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 right.
Yeah, that was a. I'll say that's probably like one of the more influential periods as far as like affecting how I drew at the time. I mean, granted, like, I don't draw, or I'm not as influenced now by, you know, as I was back then by his artwork, but I still try to like incorporate some of his, you know, like a lot of the action sequences, or like a lot of like the way he handles like movement with like all the crazy line work that you would see with manga work and stuff. And,
that's the right way to do it though. You know what I mean? It's, you don't copy, but you study their what they're doing, and then you incorporate it into your own. I mean, that's really like how you really have your own style, you know. And I personally believe you have a great style all your own.
Thanks, man.
And it's really cool, because like when you're drawing things, you know, like you did a picture of me that I posted online not too long ago, but it was like, it's kind of like what I see is like someone who, all your influences are kind of rolled into your style, but it's not a copy. It's like a fresh and new thing. You know what I mean? I mean, is it kind of hard when, do you have people who ask you like, well, I want something that's going to be like, let's say you're drawing someone and you're like, I want the style to be like this, but like the face to be real, not so round and happy, but more like jagged and like angry looking. I mean, how's that process work?
Unfortunately, I don't do as many commissions now as I did, like, say, a few years ago. But I think for the most part, I guess the people that I would do commissions for, they knew what type of art style I had. So they, you know, they had enough trust in me just pulling off something, you know, whatever they would request to have drawn. They weren't, like, super specific as to, well, we, you know, I want this stuff to look like, say, Arthur Adams or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't often where you had somebody requesting like a specific art style or drawing style when it came to commissions. I guess that's the answer to that. Although, say if I don't know, I can't think of a specific character offhand, but I guess for an example, say like Mike Mignola, he's known for his Hellboy. And if somebody, say, wanted me to do a commission, a Hellboy commission, I would still try to pull them off in my own style, but at the same time, I would be influenced by Mike Mignola and how he handles, like, lights and shadows, because his style is very, like, very contrasty, like, really, like, severe as far as, like, the contrast goes. He hardly does any like cross hatching or any like lines that differentiate between light and dark. It's just like, this is light and this is dark. Like, he used, like, very, like, really thick, really, like, dark spaces. You know, like, the way he handles space with light and dark, you know, there's no, like, gradation between the two unless, like, the colorist throws in, like, gradation of color. But he's very stark when it comes to, like, how to handle light and dark. And also, like, the way he handles space. He does a lot of, like, positive and negative space where, like, Hellboy could be, like, in a graveyard. And he doesn't really go all out as far as detail goes, but he can, like, emphasize, like, the dread somebody would feel by going to, like, a cemetery, because a cemetery is not the most comfortable place to go, no matter no. what reason you're going for, you know? So, but he would like, emphasize that, but, like, having, like, you know, really, like, dark contrasty spots contrasted against, like, really, like, light, spacious place, you know. It's kind of hard for me to like extrapolate, but
sure.
Yeah, he does a good job of like the way he forms shapes with negative and positive space. Yeah, that kind of stuff. I try to incorporate that into like my version of his Hellboy. I mean, of course, like I would, you know, try to do like where you'd have shadows. I'd separate that into like literal shapes, and then I would like do my own, the way I handle my own shadows, I would like kind of like blend the two into my own kind of thing. So in the case of that, I would like rely heavily on how like the artist would portray their character or the character they're known to draw, but then I would try to also put my own spin on it. So
oh, sure, not, yeah.
So it doesn't look like I'm completely aping him, but right. You can tell I'm like heavily influenced by how he handles certain things that are unique to him and his style.
So, yeah.
But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
You could have a sketch pad and you're able to just start going to town with whatever pops into your head. It's kind of a cool thing when that happens, you know? I mean, musicians are the same way. And you're able to, you hear a sound in your head, you're like, well, based on your ability at the time, you know, and for me, with music and stuff, it's sometimes I'll hear a solo or something like that that's beyond my ability. But then you go through the process of, okay, what do I need to do to get there? Do you have certain kinds of art where it's like, I mean, do you have gaps like that? I mean, do you ever find something where it's like, man, I'd like to be able to do that? Is it more just a, like, you see, like, there used to be this show, it was on PBS, and I'm trying to remember what it was called. And the guy, every time the guy would do a show, he would add a little bit on to something that he already did. So he's like, well, last episode we were working on the space station, and we're going to add, I think today we're going to add a docking bay here, and then we're going to put a pod over here and an extra tower. I mean, did you ever run into a spot where you feel like there's a limitation, and or maybe it's a lack of time where you have to work on a little bit at a time?
Sometimes when I do, it's not like intentional.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, unless it's a commission, then it's kind of like, you know, it's, the way I go about it is, I'll do quick gestures just to get the idea down paper.
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, you're not focused on details, because if you're in like the gesture stage, for me at least, and you're too focused on the details, you end up, it might look exquisite as far as detailing goes, but then, like, say, for example, if I'm doing, like, an action pose, and I'm too focused on, like, the foreshortening of one of the arms being close to foreground, that may look fantastic, but then the rest of the body might be, like, super tiny compared to all the time I spend on that one arm, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. When it comes to the gesture mode, it's more about, like, getting the idea down, getting the poses, getting the action down. Just kind of, it's kind of like not quite thumbnail sketch, although it can be that small, but it's more like getting the base of your piece down.
Right, a rough draft, if you will.
Super rough draft. Is for me, it's more like, and I've always been like this even when I was younger, I really like looking at like concept sketches or like the roughs of artists, because to me, I think when you're doing like the gesture part of your piece, whether you continue it on or not, I think you capture the most raw kinetic energy of your idea at that moment.
Yeah.
And then as you, if you like the way that gesture thumbnail turned out and then you refine it, then, you know, you, you put in more of the detail, but for some artists, I can't think of all the names offhand, but there's some where, like, their sketches are fantastic, but when it comes to, like, their finished artwork where it's all nice and ink and stuff, it almost, like, they lose a lot of, like, that kineticness you get from, like, just straight up putting raw gestures on a paper, because you just have, whether it's, like, movement or group shots or positioning or whatever it is, it's just, for some reason, to me at least, it just seems like a lot of that's lost.
It's kind of like the way music is, too, because it's, like, you'll hear them like, wow, this record was really polished. I don't really like it. You know, it's not that the songs are bad. It's just that they spent too much time trying to make it flawless, where it's like, I'm with you, where I like the raw qualities of music, of like a cool riff. It, like, you can hear the grittiness of, you can hear the organic qualities of what someone's doing. And then when they try to jazz it up too much, it's like, ah, this sucks. I don't want to listen to this. It has no bite to it. You know what I mean? They burned all the rough edges off. And, you know, I mean, for me, I can tell you that I knew that maybe I had something going on where I would read an article or something, or I'd listen to an interview or watch an interview where, like, let's say a musician would write an entire album, and they'll be like, well, how long did it take you to write these? And like, well, the songs just came to me, and we wrote 13 songs in 3 days. And I started noticing, for me, that the riffs would just kind of manifest themselves, and I didn't have any forethought. And I was like, you know what, if the music, it's a mysterious thing. And if that's happening to you, you know what I mean? You start realizing, hey, I'm not really putting any thought into it. It's just it's coming to you. You know what I mean? And for music, that's the way it is for me. And I know personally, I'm trying to push more in and really cultivate that. And, you know, I'm hearing a lot of the way it is from an artist, a sketch perspective, or, you know, a comic book artist perspective. It's a lot of the same thing. It's like, you get an idea that pops into your head, you just get the rough idea down so you have it. Because I can tell you, you know, when a riff would come to me or something like that, if I don't put it down, it's gone. It floats away, as I say. It just floats away. And you're like, I can't get that back. You can't capture the sound that you heard, the cadence of the chords or the notes. It's gone. You never get it back. And it's like the worst feeling in the world. And so it's like, you know, I could tell you that I've been in situations where, like, I'm in a position where there's no possible way that I could ever, I can't have a guitar in my hand. I don't have any way to record it. I could sing into my phone, you know, but that's about it. But it's like, so what I'd end up doing is I'll take an idea and I'll just play it over in my head all day long until I can get home and put it down, at least a rough track or a gesture, if you will, as you like to say, for the art stuff. It's like, musically, I go through the same process, and it's really cool, man. So it must have gotten to a point to where you knew that what I'm doing here is it's a talent, it's a gift, and it was something that you have naturally, and it's not like contrived. Or, I mean, because you could tell a difference between a musician that's schooled and they rely on a lot of music theory and a lot of instruction that they got, whereas a musician who's more on an artistic standpoint where it just flows out of them. Well, artists are the same way.
Of course.
You know, it just flows out of you, and it's a very mysterious thing, and I would encourage anybody to at least give it a shot, because you never know. You might be one of those people where it just flows out of you, and it's an amazing experience. And I know we don't normally do shows like this, but I felt that it was cool to at least kind of talk about some of these things. And obviously, we have a lot of people listen to the show that love comic books, they love movies, they love music. To me, in my mind, it's all relative, it's all art. And I felt it would be cool just kind of, you know, Ponch, kind of dig into, like, what your process is and kind of what goes through your mind when you're creating something. And I mean, this in and of itself, doing a podcast is a creation, because it's like two people sharing their thoughts on things. And number one, having the ability and the courage to speak and put your thoughts out for the general public to hear. I mean, there's a lot of people, they're petrified. My thing is I'm such a I don't know. I guess I've always been someone who I've never really had an issue with that. You know, it's I'm one of those people, I love to talk, and I love to tell stories, and you know, yeah, it's like, it's obvious by now, folks, 33 episodes in after this, that I never shut up. So, but yeah. It's great to be able to share this stuff.
Yeah, in a sense, like, your mouth is like your brush, you know?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's I think about this like every so often. I guess more now since I'm older than I was when I was younger. But you know, like when I was young, like there's like you had to draw a certain way for me in my mind to be like really good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if like now like or if you have like I guess like what you would consider like a more indie art style now. When I was younger, I was like, you know, I thought to myself, that's not art. You know, that just looks too messy or too rushed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like, especially going through college and seeing, you know, like, seeing like different types of art throughout the years and stuff. And also like, how expressive you can be with a certain type of art styles, you know, like, where's it going with this? Sorry. Oh, actually, when I was talking about the whole like gesture, you know, as far as like when I first start my piece, you know, any piece, whatever, I start with like a basic gesture, putting it down. It's almost like a snapshot because, yeah, like sure. You were saying before, if you don't like put down the idea, you, there's a chance you could lose it.
Oh, it's terrible. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It sucks.
Yeah.
But there's some guys like you know, like I was mentioning before that. Their sketch stuff looks, you know, like initial concepts looks great, but then when it gets to like final form inked and stuff, you kind of lose some of it. So I guess being, you know, as you get older, you get seasoned in certain type of things. So for me, like the way I view art now, I mean, I still carry over what I had when I was a kid, but now it's more like, okay, these indie guys I thought weren't as good as the stuff I liked at the time.
Yeah, right.
I appreciate what they do now because, like I was talking about before, the that kinetic raw, you know, like energy you capture when you're doing a sketch form. Some of these indie guys, that's all they do. And
oh, sure.
As far as like expressive stuff, yeah, they might not be as refined by say like a Jim Lee or Travis Charest or whatever, but they just capture that kinetic energy, that frantic rawness that. You know, if you try to like refine it in like, you know, proper comic book ink lines and stuff, you'll lose a lot of that stuff. So a lot of these guys just have that. Like Paul Pope, he's like a perfect example. Like he, you know, he's got like really thick ink type strokes and stuff. But the way he incorporates a lot of like that energy into his art style is just he does it so well. I mean, there's like a bunch of other guys I can't even begin to list the names and stuff, but. You know, you have stuff like that I've been appreciating more. And I was also, as I was talking about the, like, my beginning, like, process of drawing, I was thinking of also, like, expressionist artists like Jackson Pollock or Andrew Warhol. Not Andrew Warhol, like, but Jackson Pollock or Jean-Michel Basquiat and stuff. Like, a lot of stuff may look like it's something like a five-year-old might have done. But especially with Jackson Pollock, I know like a lot of his stuff, it was trying to capture like an emotion while he was doing it. So it might look like a bunch of like messy ink blotches and stuff. If you just go beyond that, just look at the essence of it and think of, well, if I was pissed off or angry at something, how would you make a visual form of that feeling? So if right. you think of it that way, then mm-hmm. I think for me at least, you come to appreciate that type of artwork or that type of art form.
Yeah, you just got to kind of change your mindset a little bit.
Right. So it's kind of like now, like for me, obviously, like art is not, you know, is not just exclusive to what you see on paper or some visual form. It, you know, when it comes to music, what I would do as a sketch, that could be like the big example I can think of when it comes to music is when for Dream Theater when that I can't remember what it's called, but like the stuff that eventually led to like the create like Metropolis Part 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff.
It was like a 20 or 30 minutes long. It was basically like a audio sketch, like of just ideas that they put down, and a lot of it doesn't sound good, but when you listen to that and then listen to what eventually became Metropolis Part 2, you notice there's a lot of like stuff that they developed from that leaked sketch. I guess according to Mike Portnoy, that stuff wasn't supposed to be leaked, but somebody I guess had access to it or leaked it or whatever. You know, whatever caused it to leak out. For me, I personally wish that kind of stuff was released more often, because as a fan, I guess for me, I'm a fan of like the process of going from start to finish. Like I like that in between.
Yeah.
And for me, listening to that, it's like, wow, those pieces they actually use in Metropolis Part 2.
Well, it's like when they would do those like behind the scenes, like you'd buy the CD and they'd have, and I'm sure they still do them, but you see the process of them recording and like actually them arguing or like saying like, I need you to sing that again, and be like, okay, I can't do this all night. Okay, I'm getting, you know, or my voice can't handle this, you know, and or something like that. They make jokes like, hey, this sounded like James LaBrie. He's a vocalist of Dream Theater. Mike Portnoy, the drummer, he'd be like, you'd have like James LaBrie in the recording booth. He'd be like, hey, that sounded kind of like Paul Shortino when he sang that, you know? And so that's for you, Jody, Paul Shortino, and my brother. You know, that they'd drop names like that. It's just hilarious, you know, and seeing them having a good time, you know, when they're putting down their tracks. And I thought about doing that, with my, with Ben, my buddy Ben and I, he's who I write music with. And just last night we were, I was over his place and, I got the new, that Ernie Ball JP6 guitar and that thing's great, man. 'Cause you can like flick a switch and it's got that, it sounds like an acoustic, and then, you can blend the electric guitar sound with the acoustic and it sounds amazing. And it was just like last night, it was just awesome because, I had an idea that I sent him, a rough sketch, if you will. And he's like, you know, I was working on the second part of it, and he's like, well, what if he tried it this way? And, you know, he took the chords and just reversed them the other way. And it was like perfect, you know? And it was just like, I like collaborations as well. You know what I mean? I mean, as far as like, you know, you have some stuff you come up with on your own, but it's kind of like, I also like the collaborative process, you know, because like I don't have an ego with that stuff. I mean, you can always get something, learn something from anybody, you know.
You know, going off of that, that's one, when I went to college, that's one of the main things I learned, whether it's like right off the bat or eventually, but in my opinion, you can't call yourself an artist, like truly call yourself an artist, if you can't take criticism or take, you know, feedback from collaboration. Because if you're in the mindset that, oh, what I made, that's all I need to do, and if you say anything different, then I'm not going to have any part of it. You can't, in my opinion, you can't call yourself an artist. You just, even if you think your stuff is like top notch, you still have to give yourself room. That you like, what if somebody sees something, like, let's say I draw something and I show you, even though you may not be an artist like me artist, but you might have a different perspective when seeing it and say, you know, I see this, or that makes me think of that. And that might be something completely different from what I was thinking as I was doing that piece. And, you know, you have to, there's a level of receptiveness you have to have as an artist. And if you don't have even a little bit of that shred of it, you, in my opinion, you can't call yourself an artist, whether it's like a visual artist, a musician, or whatever it is. You just have to be able to be receptive to feedback, or else it's, why bother, you know, continuing that craft? It's just, you're wasting time, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, and, you know, as humans, we were meant to talk to each other, and,
right.
And, you know, I mean, if you isolate yourself, you're shutting yourself off from everybody. I mean, that's not going to work, you know? And I mean, you know, it's like when Van Halen, they did Van Halen 3, it was like, one of, I think it's probably like their, yeah, it's like their lowest selling album of all time. I dug it because I'm a big Eddie Van Halen fan, but the thing was like Eddie Van Halen did, he wrote a lot of the songs just like, he did it all by himself, and a lot of people call it the Eddie Van Halen solo album, and it's like, it suffered because of that, and it was like, and they totally changed the way that they wrote songs. They did the lyrics first and then the music. And it's like, well, no, that's not how Van Halen works and how they crank out the good stuff. They write their riffs first as a band and then they put lyrics to it. I mean, that's just the way it is. And right. Yeah,
it's also, it makes me think of Metallica too, when they first came out, you know, it was just raw angst, anger. And yeah, like the lyrics reflected that, but when yeah, Cliff Burton, they allowed him to, you know, be more involved in the songwriting and the lyrics and stuff, you know, it became more of like storytelling than just trying to capture you being pissed off.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's yeah, that's too easy.
Right. Yeah. You know, oh yeah. I mean, and you know, like some bands, they can be really good as far as like capturing that raw emotion.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what they're, their main, if that's what they are, then that's great and stuff. But
yeah,
certain bands like I'm sure if like Metallica, if they just stuck with being like this angst ridden angry band, like, and that's all they write about in every single album, that would have gotten tiring after a while.
Unless you're AC/DC, then people still love it. Yeah, the same album for every, yeah, it's the same song for every. No, but that's the thing, I fall into that trap, but it's just, the creative process is great, isn't it? It's awesome, and it's very mysterious thing. I mean, heck, I mean, it's like what Mark Bagley's doing the Venom comic right now. I think it's like there's a two-part thing called The Nativity, and I think it's like issue 145 and 146 or something like that, and it was great because it's great to see him have doing Venom right now. I mean, it was like, for me, it's full circle. I mean,
you know, I have to say one thing that always bothered me about Mark Bagley is that sometimes his heads were a little too big with, you know, proportion to the body.
Well, and I think like that was his way. It was his way of getting that expression across. Probably was like how, that's probably how he projected it, you know what I mean? But that's just my guess. And it was kind of funny too, because like, you look at how he draws like, say like Spider-Man's leg, it's always like got an arc to it, like his legs are like his shins and everything are bent sideways, but he does that to accentuate the web swinging action and that kind of stuff, because I mean, when you've got a static image, you know, You have to draw the characters a certain way to show movement and really, you know, kind of, you know, some of the, I would guess, I can't draw crap, but I can tell you, I guess I perceive that artists do that to project like movement and how agile Spider-Man would be or something like that. And believe me, I've tried to draw, I can't do it. And it's like people that can't sing or people that try to play guitar on the camp. Nah, I know my limitations and I know what I'm good at and what I'm not. And I stick to that. And, you know,
The thing about that too is, it's like with music too, like guitarists and stuff. Like Mark Bagley, he has this very distinct style, like the style he developed. That's, if you were to like look at like a bunch of images on Google, you can point, if you know his art style, you can easily point his stuff out amongst like all the other artists that you may, you know, search for. And it's kind of like with music, like John Petrucci has his own distinct guitar play versus Yngwie Malmsteen versus Steve Vai versus Joe Satriani versus, you know, Zakk Wylde versus Jerry Cantrell. They might be playing the same instrument, but they have, I don't even want to say spin, because to me it kind of has negative connotations, but they've developed their own style where, like, all of those guitarists I just listed and many more, they can play the same, say they play like some Deep Purple, you know, Smoke on the Water, they can play the exact same, that song the exact same way as it was written, but each guitarist has their own style and method of, like, doing their own solo. So John Petrucci, when it comes to solo, the solo part of that song, he'll do his own version versus Zakk Wylde versus Steve Vai or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's their signature style. So with comic artists, Mark Bagley has his own like distinct style versus J. Scott Campbell versus John Romita Jr., Arthur Adams, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, Will Eisner, you know, old school, new school, not even created school, you know what I mean? Like they all have their own style. So, and if they all drew the same way, it would just, like you're saying, become static and boring. And it's kind of like, all right, you look like every other guy. So
yeah, the whole legion of Jim Lee clones that were in the 90s, you know, they're trying to like copy him. And oh, he's got a successful, you know, career. I could do that, you know.
You know, what's interesting about that is a guy that I appreciate a lot more now. I mean, I've always liked him, but Travis Charest, or Charest, however you say his last name, he was like a Jim Lee clone, but he wasn't completely aping Jim Lee, but, excuse me, as far as, like, the cross-hatching and, like, exaggerated, like, costume features and stuff, yeah, he did all that stuff, but... As he started breaking away and doing his own stuff. Like I think his style became more apparent as you saw him do Wildstorm. Wildcats. I think this was around the time where I think DC bought out Wildstorm.
Right. Yeah.
And he was doing Wildcats for that. Like his distinct style became more apparent at that, you know, around that time to me at least. And if you followed his work since that point, it's evolved to the point where, like, if you see what he does now, it looks nowhere close to what he did when he was like aping Jim Lee. Mm-hmm. And it's so fascinating. Like as artists, no matter what artistic field you're in, there's what I like about that is, you know, not only do I like the behind the scene process, I also like seeing like the evolution of like where you were at one point in time in your field to where you're at now. And like another thing for me is a true artist, no matter what it is, you allow yourself, not only do you allow yourself to be receptive to other others as far as feedback goes, you also allow yourself to evolve and change and hopefully for the better.
Yeah,
like even with Jim Lee, even though some of his stuff might still seem static to me, at least you can still see an evolutionary progression of how his art style changed, even though some things may be similar. But there's also, like, things that have changed from, like, the early 90s to what it is now. And I'm so fascinated with that, with, like, certain artists. Like, even Eric Larson, like, he's got his own uber-exaggerated, distinct style. But he did for Amazing Spider-Man versus what he's doing now for Savage Dragon, there's, like, similarities, but there's some stuff that you can tell is different.
It's always, like, the stuff, big lips, you know, like the Mary Jane lips. It's almost like an octopus or a suction cup. Yeah, you know what? Where it all comes together? For me, it's all relative because it comes down to the hands, the heart, and the mind for both music and art. That's the cool thing that brings it all together. It's a human element, and I really just, it's awesome. And Is there these days when you're drawing something, do you have like a music going? Like, do you have headphones in? Do you draw at home these days and have just music playing like ambient? Or, I mean, do you do any of that? Or what kind of keeps you, what do you do when you're drawing something? Or do you just like to sit in the quiet and just, or maybe just hear the noise from the outside or something?
A little bit of both. Sometimes if I, you know, decide to draw in the quiet, I just, you know, I don't know if I, like, say, for example, like, right now my fridge in my apartment is making its fridge noises and stuff, and sometimes I can hear that. Like, I usually draw in my bedroom because I have a desk set up in my bedroom and stuff, so sometimes I can hear the fridge if it's loud enough in my bedroom, and not that I allow that to influence me, you know, what I'm drawing at that moment, but that kind of adds on to like the atmosphere. Cause like for me, another cool thing that I like about like doing like the concept, like gestures and stuff, is sometimes it's almost like note taking for people who write, or when you're like at a seminar or something, like there's some sort of like connective aspect of that where, depending on how into like a sketch I'm doing, I can remember, wow, these sounds were going on, or this is what I was thinking, or whatever. So, yeah, when I'm in quiet mode, sometimes I remember that, and I can relate to certain things that was going on at that time. I sometimes I do draw to music. I don't do that often, but it just depending on how I'm feeling. Like if, say, for example, I had a bad day at work and I just want to like vent out, and you know, like I so most of the time I can do that with drawing, and that's enough for me to vent. But sometimes I just need a little bit more to allow me to vent even further. So that's when I'll put some music on. And some of my more aggressive, angrier pieces, if you want to call it that, happen when I'm listening to like some, you know, super aggressive stuff.
Symphony, you know, whatever X, band it is. Unleash the Fire. Yeah. Inferno, yeah, Unleash the Fire. Yeah.
Yngwie Malmsteen, Unleash the Fury.
Well, it's funny because, like, remember, like, the Gigantour? It was like the Gigantour. They had, like, that album, and they Symphony X played those two really heavy songs. He's like, and here's the next one, Sins and Shadows. Like, that. It was like, come on, let's mix it up. Like that. And you see, like, the video, and it had, like, the guys, like, headbanging and stuff. It was like, like that. It was like, oh, man, it's great, you know? It was, yeah. What was the other one they did? It was, Inferno, Unleash the
Fire. Yeah, I think it was Inferno.
Yeah, Inferno, and then Sins and Shadows. Or Sins and Shadows! Like that.
Yeah. No, even Dream Theater did that. They play like...
their heavier stuff,
they played, yeah. Panic Attack.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The Glass Prison, I think. And the, right. That's some of their more heavier stuff, so...
Yeah, oh man, what a great album.
The double disc?
Yeah.
Oh, man, they have the DVD of the shows.
It was like Six Degrees of Separation, right? Was that the one Glass Prison was on?
Yeah, no, yeah, Glass Prison on Six Degrees of Inner Turbulence.
Six Degrees of Inner Turbulence. What the frig did I say? Nah, it doesn't matter. Six Degrees of Chuck Norris, I don't know.
That'd be an awesome album.
It's Roundhouse Kicks.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's an awesome concert. Even like some of the new metal acts they had on there, they actually performed fairly well. Like, I think they had like Boba Flex or some crap like that. I don't know, but it lent itself to like what Gigantor is supposed to be, which, you know, in that I would never like go out of my way to download some of that stuff, but in that context, yeah, it's not bad, man.
I want to hear Anthrax bring the noise. We've covered a wide swath here tonight, folks, but
oh man,
but no, you know, Ponch and I, we do this. This is our thing. You know, we go all over the
place. Yeah, man.
But no, it's I mean, ever since I've known you, man, it's like you'd come over to my house, and you got to a point, like when you're a teenager, you were bringing over freaking pencils and sketch pads, and I'm like, this guy is really getting into this stuff, and to me, from what I observed, was like you and I both really liked like RPG, like role playing games, like the ones on the like Super Nintendo and that kind of stuff, and mm-hmm. And to me, that kind of fed your passion for art. And I mean, the thing is like that and like anime and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's just cool, you know. And it the 90s was a great time to be growing up. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, it was fantastic. I think so. Yeah, I mean. I wish that like the, you know, the younger folks, like you see walking around just headphones in and stuff, that don't talk to anybody and don't talk to anyone else besides text, or just you know, don't say excuse me in the store. I think that if we could take and put them in a time machine back to about maybe say 1993 and have them kind of like experience some of that culture. That do them some good. I think that they would emerge better people.
I agree.
I mean, because it's like, right, things are so instable now. There's no mystery to anything. And I was thinking about this today. I'm like, you know, it's like, where was I? I was out and about today. I'm thinking, you know, this was so much more fun, you know, back before like the internet stuff, because it was like, if I want to know something about an artist or a musician or what kind of gear they played or like what kind of comic books and stuff were out there that this artist did, it was like you had to go dig, and there was a mystique to it. And I think that I don't know. It's just like now everything's so easy with the internet. It's like there's no fun in anything anymore. It's like, oh, there it is. I Googled it. There you go. And it's like,
yeah, well, you know, it's that kind of stuff. It's a double-edged sword. Like, hell with Twitter, like there, I've been starting to follow like artists that I appreciate and artists that I like and stuff. And in one aspect is great that you can like with Jim Lee, he does like these live Twitch streams of him just drawing whatever it is he wants to draw in a particular Twitch stream and right. stuff. And that access you have directly to the artist, like no middleman to get you that access to, you know, whoever it is you follow, that is fantastic. Something we never would have had in the 90s, but at the same time, like you're saying, everything's so easily accessible. And just this mentality of like instant gratification and instant satisfaction.
Yeah, that, like, sucks.
Like, even if you were watching a Jim Lee live Twitch stream, it's old hat an hour after watching it. And yeah. at that point, you're like, well, what else is
yeah,
there?
I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, because it was like yeah. You used to have to fight for stuff, man. And there was sweeter the reward, you know, it was. And I sound like Yoda when I said that. Sweeter the reward it was. it's just like, you know, it just, yeah, I find myself kind of digging into like older stuff. Like, for example, like I bought a pouch of Rambo Black Flak chewing gum from 1984 off eBay because I wanted it. And obviously I didn't
eat any of it.
No, I didn't open it and it's unopened. And,
I think you should. Come on, man.
You can sense the wheels turning in my head. I'll post a picture of it on the on the social media pages. It's funny, but I was like, yeah, I spent $14 on this pouch of Black Flak chewing gum. I'm never gonna open, and it was like because they had Rambo on there. You know, I like the art and stuff. But it was like I find myself going back and getting into like older stuff that kind of like inspired me as a kid, you know, to get into like comics or cartoons or action figures or whatever. And it's like if I meet like a celebrity or something, number one, I know they don't want to meet me because they're just doing it because they can make good money doing it. But what I will do is I will say like I'll do a deep pull, right, for their benefit and mine. Because it will be like, hey, okay, well, maybe I can answer this question that I haven't heard 15 friggin' times already, or 50 million times. It's like, I do that. I can pull out of the deep well of knowledge I have with the things that I'm into. That's what I do. I found myself kind of going back, like, I watch, like, episodes of, like, the A-Team and stuff. Because it's like, that's what really got me into the hobbies and stuff that I have, you know? I mean, the music and the characters and, you know, like, a guy getting thrown over someone's head and the camera being underneath. To me, all the entertainment stuff that I enjoyed then and I enjoy now, it's all relative. It all feeds what I do. And I think that probably holds true for you. I mean, it feeds what you do. It's kind of makes up who you are.
Yeah, and, you know, on top of that, it's all this stuff is also subjective and objective too. Like yeah. it, you know, it's what I may gravitate towards may not necessarily be what you gravitate towards, and which is great because, like, as far as like comic book artists and comic book art, it's I'm happy to see there's such a wide range of like artistic styles and ways of expressing different versions of the same thing. You know, what, you know, for example, like a battle scene, there's like so many different ways of expressing that for depending on the artist style, and some things that I like may be stuff that you may not like, and whoever's listening to this could be completely different for what they like, and it's great, and I think that should be embraced. Like I was saying before, as I've gotten older, like I've come to appreciate that kind of stuff, because it's kind of like when I was younger, I just had this one, almost like not one track mind, but there's like a specific style that I liked, and if anything else didn't fit into that, I didn't really care much for it. But now it's kind of like, all right, fine. There's certain artists that I still may not be like super fans of, but I do appreciate certain things that they do.
Yeah.
And sometimes it might strike a chord or certain moment that I wasn't expecting, and it might, you know, like influence me to do certain things. And that can be with anything, like with comic books, you know, traditional contemporary art or music or whatever. Like how, like recently, like I the stuff I'm listening to now, I think I mentioned briefly in other episodes, where like I'll like super aggressive stuff that I'll listen to now, I would never have thought of me going out of my way to listen to when I was in college, because I was just, all right, Dream Theater, similar stuff, or nothing at all. And now it's like I can see the merits of how other musicians do certain things that were different, even though there's like certain like things that are kind of common amongst most, you know, musicians and stuff, but even then they spin it in a way where it's unique to them, and some people like it, some people don't. And especially now with like this stupid like sensitive movement or whatever it is that's going on, like it's just I don't know if that has a hand in how it would influence like the way people view art or music or whatever. It's just it would be cool if, like, whether it does or not, like if people can be a little bit more receptive as to like, fine, you may, like, I'm not saying like listen to stuff that you don't like and try to pull stuff from it, but be a little open and receptive to certain things you're not normally used to. Like if like say metal, if you're into like, let's say 70s metal, hey, there's nothing wrong with 80s metal. Some of that stuff is actually good, you know? Or like if you're into like progressive metal, like there's some, you know, degent metal that's actually pretty darn good.
Oh, there's good stuff out there, man. I could start listing names off, but
yeah, me too, man. It's
I bought an 8-string guitar because I got, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of these guys doing this kind of music are like in their early 20s, you know, or like late teens. And it's like, yeah, I'm like a relic, you know, in their eyes, but it's like I can still appreciate what they're doing. But see, just as a sidebar, kind of a peninsula, if you will, like Tony McAlpine, he's an awesome guitarist. He's one of my favorite guitar players currently because he's the most musical. He bought an 8-string guitar, and I watched an interview. Well, he didn't buy it. Ibanez made one for him because he's awesome. You know, he's got an endorsement. And it was like, he's like, no, I don't. He goes, it's just a guitar with 8 strings on it. Because they're like, well, is that like, does that mean like you're getting in like the djent stuff? It's like, well, no, it's just a guitar with 8 strings on it. It's just more notes to use. And I was like, right. Yeah, I mean, that's why I got it. You know, I mean, you got like Tozin Abasi from Animals as Leaders. And
that is great.
Oh, he's fantastic. But that's his jam, right? That's for you, Jeremiah Maguire. I got that from him. Yeah, that's not my jam. That's what he says. It's awesome. But anyway, but it was like, I watched an interview with Tony McAlpine. He's like, yeah, it's just an extra string, you know? I was like, yeah, okay, I'm not off my hinges here. Because, like, I can't play djent. I'm not hyperactive enough. I don't, you know, those guys move 10 times as fast as me. They got these nervous twitches that... and there's been studies that show this, is that generation of players are more like the... It's like, I'm not wired that way. I'd be more inclined to play like David Gilmour, or, you know, it's like, I've never been a hyperactive person as a player or anything. I mean, it's like, yeah, I'll get fired up about stuff, but I'm probably like half the speed of someone that's 13 years younger than me. And it's like, and for me personally, I want music to be melodic. I don't want it to be all uptight and tense all the time, and there's a time and a place for that, but I found myself, like, getting older, like, get into, like, older styles of music, and it's not because, like, oh, you're a dinosaur. No, it's the fact that I, like you said, you start exploring other things that you wouldn't have given the time of day when you were younger, and you're like, this is great. There's some gold nuggets here. You cherry pick what you want to listen to. Are you going to pick up a Cream album and like every song on there? No, I want to hear White Room, you know, and because this song's funny, you know, it's got all the wah-wah stuff on it, you know, and it's like, and the lyrics are cool. The song's funny. I mean, we like it for all reasons. Like you and I laugh when we mention it because it's a funny song. And my brother actually got me into that song. I was like, am I going to listen to all Eric Clapton stuff and like it? Of course not. Most of it I don't like, you know?
Yeah, like, I've noticed, well, I'm not like a ginormous Eric Clapton fan, but I've noticed I really like a lot of like the stuff before he became like pop popular, you know what I mean? Like, like the Laylas and whatever, stuff after that, like
Sure.
the white, the Cream era,
That stuff
like
was raw, man. It
he
was awesome.
was, yeah, it was excellent.
It's like you could listen to them and it's like a jam or a band like jamming out in a studio and just getting it down on tape. And
Yeah,
that's the
man.
kind of stuff I'm talking about. And it's like all the early Van Halen stuff was like that. You'd hear the hiss of the analog recording, of the tape of the recording console. You hear that, it was like, and then they like released like remastered versions where they took all that. I was like, don't take it out. I want that. That was what makes those songs great, is the raw nature of it and the sound and the tone. It's like a Marshall amp cranked up to 10, and he's got this guitar that costs him 130 bucks of like, it's a Frankenstein Strat, it's like, it's the best. And I mean, I just wish that like generations now, like the younger ones, it's like, get into this stuff. Don't shut it out, man. You guys don't know what you're missing. And I would encourage anyone, if you think you want to get into drawing and art or music, acting, whatever, do it. And do it because you want to do it. Don't do it because someone says you can make a quick buck doing it. This is, you got to be true to yourself. Listen to me, Mr. Soapbox here, But it's like,
That's
I
right.
mean, you're missing out if you don't at least give it a shot. No, it's not for everybody. There's
Yeah.
a lot of people that would listen to this episode like, well, I'm sick of listening to this. It's boring because I don't like any stuff. That's fine. But this is an opportunity for people to at least get exposed to this kind of discussion. And I enjoy it. So.
Yeah. And you know, the thing too is that the stuff that we like and we gravitate towards, it's out there. It's just
Yeah.
is buried deep underneath all the disgusting regurgitate pop stuff
It's the
that
EDM stuff. It's just push it all.
record labels trying
Yeah.
to force feed down our throats and
Yeah.
stuff, and amongst all the other nonsense going on,
I
it's
don't buy
out there.
into
It's
it.
just,
Yeah.
yeah, oh yeah, it's just unfortunately you have to dig even more now for that stuff than we had to when we were younger, but the stuff is out there, and knowing that, I mean, and thankfully I've come across that stuff, whether it's from comics or music or whatever, like it's out there, and what if you know where to find them or where to look for them, you can discover them, and that kind of gives me hope in thinking that, all right, this younger generation, they're not producing crap nonsense stuff. There's actually people out there, like youngsters compared to us, that are actually producing fantastic art, fantastic music. It's just unfortunately, they're not popularized by whatever pop fads going on or whatever's not trending right now. It's just they're actually producing music versus they're making it versus not having it produced for them.
Well,
You
yeah,
know,
and I mean, the other thing too
it's
is
out
that,
there, man.
yeah, I mean, it's like they need to understand that the movies like Marvel, like all the Marvel stuff and Justice League and all, it's like this is all stuff that's been around for decades, even before you and I were around. And it's like you guys, they need to go back and I would encourage them to go back and get into this stuff and see where it all came from and how it has evolved into this. And in a very small way. The reason I've taken the time on this episode to talk about these things, because this is the kind of stuff that gets me going. This is the reason I do a podcast. This is the reason why, like, you and I have been friends for, what, 27 years? I've known Jody since
Damn, that long.
1996. Yeah, I've known him
Wow.
since 1996. It's like we talk about this stuff all the time, and it's like I was talking to my brother about, like, he was watching the 89 Batman movie, and one of the kids was like, Dad, this looks old. This looks old. And it's like, when I see it looks like a masterpiece because there's no CG. If they had special effects or something, they had to get creative and they had to use either models or like tangible models, or they had to use some animation, some hand-drawn animation for it. And they had to really pull out all the stops, and it might look old, but that's because it was real. And it's like, for example, I was talking to someone on, I got a Twitter feed for the Case in Point Twitter page. I'm in this big group of like 30 people in it, and I said if they redid if you know if they we're talking about movies, and I'm like, well, if they did like Airwolf or Knight Rider or something like that, and they did it, I said I don't want any CG. I want it to be a real helicopter. Or a real car with real, like, camera work, because the old series was great because they did real helicopters. Now, they had some shots that were models and, you know, gas-powered RC helicopters and stuff, but... Oh, excuse me, I'm getting tired. It was I know, I'm an old man. It's 8:26 and I'm yawning. Isn't that sad? I've already had three Pepsis.
Come on, man. It's 11:28 my time. Come on.
Well, I'm used to getting up at 4:30 in the morning every day, so...
Oh, goodness. Well, you have kids, so...
Yeah, yeah, and it's in the middle of the night. Like, what's going on? Am I in a haunted house? No, it's one of the kids on the monitor. But anyway, it's like you see going there, it's like, what's wrong? You okay? Yeah. Why are you crying? And then they don't respond because they're back out cold again. Then you go back in the bed and... You know, it's like, it's all for nothing, you know? And, so it was like, but at any rate, it's like, I want to see like real camera work. And it was like, you and I watch this freaking Airwolf on VHS. We'd record them. I'd record them off like the WWOR, you know, and stuff. Man. It's all grainy cause the VCR was on its last legs. And it was like, but you know, you'd watch this camera work, you're like, this is amazing. But then you're like, well, that took up their whole budget for the year, for the whole season. And it was like, nowadays, it's like, you know, I'm excited about some of the new TV shows coming out. Like the Lord of the Rings TV series would be really good. That's got like, what, a $2 billion budget and it's a 5-year deal through Amazon. It's like amazing. And I'm like, that's going to be good because they got the budget for it. But it was like, I want them to do some shows that if you want to really do reboots or something or whatever, use real photography and don't use this stupid CG garbage. I just remember there was a Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where like, he was flying these like real high tech Comanche style combat helicopters, these gunships, and they use complete CG to transform. Turn them into jets. The helicopters turn into jets. And I'm like, it looked terrible. And it was like, when we watched Justice League, it's like Steppenwolf still looks bad. The animation looks terrible. It looks like, you know, really bad, like late 90s CG. I mean, it was garbage. And I'm like, I don't want that. And it's just like, I want something legit that looks real, you know. And I mean, I like Transformers, some of that kind of stuff. But they made it look good, you know, because they had the budget for it. So, but at any rate, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but that's my opinion.
Well, I think, there is something to what you're talking about. Like, I think there needs to be some sort of, like, realistic foundation when it comes, like, CG. Like, I think the best recent example I can think of is Thanos from Infinity War.
There you go.
I remember reading about how Josh Brolin... He had like, he wasn't really sold on playing a CG character, but Mark Ruffalo, I think, informed him on, no, it's just, hear me out. And I guess he was explaining how, you know, like motion capture that he went through to portray the Hulk and stuff, and, you know, how accurate it is to like capturing the nuances of your, because, I mean, you're still acting, but it's more of like performance than just basing on your own, how you can like portray emotion and stuff. So if that makes sense at all, but I think once he tried it out, like he realized like, yeah, you can be pretty nuanced with this because like, even though the end result's going to be CG, it's still based on his human real performance. And thankfully, like, of course, DC and Marvel have the budget to like have that translate faithfully from his performance onto screen. But that's, to me, is just a perfect example of that. Even though it's a CG, you know, like generated performance, when you're seeing it, it's still based on like something realistic that Josh Brolin did. And for me, you know, we mentioned in when we're talking about Infinity War, that was one of my favorite things of that movie, that they were able to capture that nuance of, you know, all the subtleties that Josh Brolin was enacting and portraying, and they capture that. So it's like I'm a fan of like practical effects. I also like CG as long as they're not using it as a crutch to get out of doing practical effects. Like, to me, it's kind of like you have this gorgeous woman by herself, she should be beautiful. She shouldn't cover up her face with makeup. The makeup should accentuate what she has already. And to me, when you're using, like, when you have the basis of, like, you know, whether it's Josh Brolin acting as Thanos, or, like, you're talking about Airwolf using practical, you know, models and stuff, the CG should enhance and better what the original, you know, like, the what you had, the tangible stuff you had. It should enhance that and not just be the crutch of, like, well, we're too lazy to make effect, you know, have somebody build a model of this stuff. We're just going to create everything CG. And the problem with that is that it's like with the first X-Men movie. Watch that now. Some of the CG in that movie is atrocious, man. It's just, it's so dated. And, like, had they gone a little bit more into, like, doing some of that stuff in, you know, practical effects versus just completely relying on CG, some of that stuff would hold up a little bit more better, you know, now versus what it is now. So
yeah,
that's my rant.
No, that's good. That's good stuff. I mean, we've cast a wide net this evening on this episode. It should be good. I can't wait to see Ant-Man and Wasp. I think that'll be a good one. I finally did get caught up on all those other movies. Like, I watched Thor Ragnarok and Spider-Man Homecoming, Black Panther. And I had some screenshots on the Facebook page or the Twitter page I put up there of watching that. But it's kind of funny, you know, watching, like, Star Wars Episode 1 on Ultra HD. Like, I just had the DVD, the old DVD sets. I put it in my Xbox, and I've got a Ultra HD Curve Samsung I put it on. And it's funny because you could see the green screen. I mean, it looks bad. And the worst part, my wife and I are watching it, the worst part was when they're standing at that, they're just before Jar Jar does that leap into the air and he rolls into the water. When he hits the water, it looks like someone took a bucket of, or like a, they took the water from a bucket of water and they just threw a pebble in there. It looks bad. It looks very bad. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, so it's like, you watch some of these older movies and the techniques they used, I mean, it really brings them out. And then it's like, you know, if you're watching like a show like Star Trek Next Generation, where they went through and they got everything cleaned up, you see, like, wow, Patrick Stewart was pockmarked even back then, you know? And it's like, you know, it's like, wow, you know? And you see just anywhere, I mean, I'm not knocking on him, you know, he's a great guy, but it was like, just anyone you see, I mean, we all have imperfections on our faces or whatever. And it's like, you know, when in the old days, it was like, you know, the resolution was so low and it was fuzzy and you never saw like the divots in someone's face or if they had like, you know, razor burn or something that day before they came onto the set, you know. It was like, so yeah, it's kind of, we're kind of spoiled now. We're spoiled. And yeah, but yeah, I think I want to start wrapping things up here, but yeah, if you end up going to that 5 Points Festival, Ponch, I'd love to hear all about it. We can talk about it on the show and maybe some of the highlights of what you saw, and I'll do the same thing with the Comic-Con tomorrow.
Yeah, if anything, it'll be either that or I don't know for a fact I'll be watching Solo this weekend, so my apology, guys, for not having a review. I thought I was going to watch it last weekend, but fortunately it didn't happen. So, but we will talk about it.
Yeah, we'll skip the court martial this time.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man.
No, I know. The McSauce boys, they hinted that they really wanted to hear our take on it. And yeah, I'm almost afraid. I don't want my bubble to get burst because I enjoyed the movie so much. But I'm gullible. I tend to take things for what they are, not what they aren't. And, you know, it's like, but all the accounts I've seen, some of my friends and stuff texting me, it's like they loved it, you know. And it was like, because of the episode 8 putting such a damper on things and making the fans kind of skittish, or just the general public, it's like, it's hurt the movie. It's not that it's a bad movie, but it's just that Disney has screwed the pooch, you know. And I just, yeah, I hope that things can rebound. And I think they need to rethink their map of what they're doing with Star Wars. Because don't water it down, please. Do not water it down. Do a movie every 2 years, not every year. And, you know, and do some good movies for crying out loud. Okay, don't make us wait 2 years for a pile of garbage, you know. But anyway, that's my take on it. That's my opinion. So, is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, not really. I mean, it was fun.
Well,
it was
thanks fun for ranting thanks about for letting me dig stuff. Into your psyche too. I mean, it's
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't think that's the first time I ever had anybody actually do that. So, there's a little level of like uncomfortableness, but no, I enjoy talking about it. It's kind of weird. Usually don't have people take my brain like that, but no, it was fun.
Well, no, I mean it's hey man, what you do is I've always been fascinated by it, and I just, you know, I really want to get your approach on things, and I think that people can, you know, I think people want to hear that kind of stuff. So no, it was great, man. I mean, I appreciate you to you know, kind of sharing some of that process. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, oh, I will say, I'm sorry, man. I will say it was, I was telling you this before we started recording. I thought it was really, really cool how the McSauce called, shouted us out during their Infinity War review. I was telling that you that.
That was awesome. Yeah.
It was kind of neat how, like, I've been listening to these guys for like a few years, and the fact that like Ian, it's like, yeah, Ponch and Justin, they're talking this, that. It's like, holy crap, he called me by my name. This is great. And I had this little kid grin on my face, and it was like, that's awesome. Kind of neat. So yeah, so that was a cool shout out. So but
thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, it was great. It's like every time he mentioned the Liberty Tribunal, I wanted to drive my car up the road. Yeah, I was like, it was like there's not very many opportunities I get to pull things like that, so I wanted to do that, you know. And, yeah, I don't think that those characters will see the light of day. Hey, I could be wrong, but they did have Ego on there, so.
Yeah, you never know, man. I'm hoping to see friggin' Eternity and
the Beyonder.
The dude. Yeah, Beyonder. Yeah, all those mega celestial characters.
And while we're at it, how about the Stranger? Okay, that's who I didn't bring up last time. Stranger. So, Mr. Ian Sharpley.
The reason why he's called the Stranger.
Yeah. Ian Sharpley, that's for you, buddy. Figured I'd pull the Stranger. And, yeah. They're characters that most people watching those movies are like, what the frig are you talking about? You know. So, it's like Epoch. What's some of the other ones? I'm trying to think. Who's that guy that had the... Who's that guy that was the Herald of Galactus after Silver Surfer ditched him? Terax, and he looks like a reject of Darkseid, same shaped head, and he's got that like huge blade that could slice through anything. And
yeah. Well, I figured they did Ronin in Guardians of the Galaxy, so there's no reason to make a Terax in movies.
Yeah, that's true.
Marvel movies.
That's
so
true. Yeah,
yeah, he's better left in the comic pages.
Yeah, it was like in-betweener, you know.
Oh, there's so many of them.
They could have the Watcher. Why don't they have the Watcher in there? You know what I mean? Because, I mean, he doesn't get involved, but he could at least have his blank eyes and his big bald head on there, you know. I thought there was a cameo of him just in the background. But, and I, you know, after watching Thor Ragnarok, I did see a Beta Ray Bill. He was part of that. His head was on that tower.
Thor that Ragnarok. Was cool.
Yeah, that was a nice nod. Who else? Yeah, there's so many of those cosmic characters. They'll never, ever.
Or like Annihilus.
Oh, geez. I thought he was cool though. I mean, he's kind of like a mechanical looking like gargoyle dragon hybrid thing.
Yeah. Or what's the dude from the Kree? What's his name? Champion? No.
Oh boy.
The dude with the mohawk. You know who I'm talking about?
Not to be confused with Yondu.
Oh, no, no, no. Nothing like Yondu. No, he was like, you know, I'll stop. I'm tarnishing
we're digging a hole. Yeah, we won't mention we won't mention the Shi'ar Empire either. We won't even go there.
Yeah. That's a completely different thing there, but
hey, I just want to throw it in, okay?
Yeah, Lilandra, is that that lady that hooked up with Charles Xavier?
We're really
that stupid the stupid face tattoos, yes. Just like the eye drops off their eyes and stuff.
Yes, yeah. They're the Shi'ar Empire. Yeah, yeah. It, you know what? And the thing is, it doesn't make it any better. When I keep buying those. I went up to a swap meet flea market thing in Packwood, Washington, and I smelled Philip Morris in my cigarettes in my nostrils for 3 days after the fact because the cigarette smoke was so bad. And I was up in the mountains in the. Up in the mountains, I was in a mountain pass, and pine trees, clear mountain air. No, cigarettes, and people eating elephant ears and fried dough. Yeah, that's what it was. And I bought, I only spent $4 up there, right? They had comic tables there, and all the stuff they had was like 90s stuff, and which is way overproduced. And even now, it shouldn't be that expensive. They wanted like full cover price and then some for like freaking New Warriors and
what?
Ridiculous. So I bought four comic books, and three of them were the Marvel update. Those Marvel updates where they have the bios for these really obscure characters. And you know, it's they got some really rough characters in there that I've never even seen in some of the old comic books. I'm like, where are these guys from? And I mean, it's really funny, some of the characters and you know that you see on there. But I mean, yeah, so that's what happened. Yeah, it's most of the stuff was junk up there. It was crap, and it was just like I told my brother-in-law, because my brother-in-law and I were up there, and I go, this is just junk. 99.9% of stuff is crap. It's just, nobody wants this stuff. It's like a giant Facebook marketplace with where everything's like full retail and it's garbage. You know, it's like, I don't want a dustbuster with no battery. You know, it's like, you know, it. Who knows? But anyway.
Yeah, they're hoping for that one poor sap that's actually into that stuff, and yeah, that's their gold right there, man.
Yeah, I've been carting this stuff all up and down the countryside. He's gonna buy this. It's like they had like this Star Trek board game. It was Star Trek Risk, right? And I'm like, hey, this is kind of cool. It's based off the original series from the 60s, and I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, you know, my spider sense is going off here. It probably doesn't even have all the pieces. They wanted like $10 for it. I'm like, yeah, I'm not even gonna bother, because the guy eating a sub probably doesn't even know if all the pieces are in there. He just has it to sell, you know. He doesn't care. But anyway, if you're still sticking with us, we really appreciate it. And
thank you.
Yeah. Again, check out McSauce Podcast, Ian, Paul, and Matt. Check out his Fireside Chat, Ryan McCormick. Check out the Element of Surprise with Chadwick Sewitt. We appreciate all the kudos from those guys. Thank you so much. Thanks for buying some shirts. And remember, folks, if you want to buy a shirt and you want to support this podcast, you can get Case in Point Podcast t-shirts from tpublic.com. And we will be getting some more designs out there. We'll probably be putting some new shirts up, so stay tuned for that. And all right, guys, that's just going to about do it. So we'll catch you guys next time.